Welcome to a special edition of the Frame Voyager Ungraded podcast. I'm really excited to share this episode with everyone, as I feel it has a lot to offer aspiring filmmakers in their journey. In this episode, I talked with Elliot and Xander Weaver of Eleander Films. They are the creators of the feature film Cosmos that was filmed and produced over the course of 5 years, and they filmed the entire movie that made it to screenings with a camera that cost around $1,000, and more recently released a short film about astronomy using the 6K Pro attached to the telescope. I was able to interview them here recently, and our discussion was full of great information for young filmmakers, and I thought I would turn this discussion into a podcast. They provide great insights on the struggle and journey of creating your own feature film and great tips for filmmakers of all types. We hope you enjoy this discussion. Cool. Well, first, I just want to welcome both of you to this interview and channel. A little bit about you guys, Elliot and Xander. You guys are both producers, writers, directors, and are from the UK. So, you know, I understand that you guys used to do documentaries, and I heard that you actually been licensed by Netflix Prime and Oculus too for those documentaries. But you've also been starting to do more feature films lately with your feature film Cosmos, which I really want to dig into and talk to you guys about how you kind of went through that on such a low budget to do it and make it, I mean, such a good looking movie, in my opinion, or film. I was very impressed with how you guys did it reading about it. But first, before we get into some of the video and stuff, tell me a little bit about yourself. What got you guys into filmmaking?
Good question. I think like a lot of filmmakers, we just fell in love with movies when we were very young, and both our parents actually worked in television. So our dad was a cameraman and our mom was a makeup designer. And so for us, we had this amazing reference that this, you know, this world that we looked in from the outside, you know, was a real world where people worked and people made TV and people made films. And so we had that reference growing up that actually, if it was something we were interested in, we could kind of pursue it. And our parents are obviously very supportive of that. But yeah, we just fell in love with, you know, I mean, we're massive Spielberg fans, so that did a huge amount for us.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And we just dreamt of growing up and kind of doing that ourselves and trying to tell stories on film. So it just followed through high school. We made video essays instead of documentary, instead of essays, written essays. We did music videos for mates' bands and things. And then eventually when we left high school, we just jumped in headfirst and did a lot of freelancing, but eventually set up our own production company and just started creating content.
Awesome. That's great. Do you feel like, you know, because I think there's always a little bit of a dig put on like, oh, contract work and all that kind of stuff. Do you think some of doing some of that and working kind of that kind of helped prepare you a little bit for doing films and doing bigger projects like that?
Absolutely. Yeah. We really enjoyed those early years of kind of, we sort of used it to cut our teeth, really. We did a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. We started mainly in the camera department. I left school about 3 years before Xander, so I did a little bit more of it than he did. And I did some assisting and then worked on some kind of lower end commercials, but commercials for cars and drinks and companies and stuff like that. Did a bit of drama for the BBC over here. But then we did a bit of editing for, you know, and all sorts of things. And we learned different skills. And I guess in a way, our philosophy on directing is, although you kind of, you want to be the dumbest person in the room, as it were, when it comes to skills, you know, you want to work with people who are super proficient in a discipline, having an understanding of that discipline, its limitations, its time constraints, you know, the stresses people are under, we think allows you to be a bit more of a sympathetic and then hopefully, you know, more amenable director, and you can talk to people in their own language, and, you know, you can talk to an editor and go like, I know this is a bit of a pain or blah, 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 blah. I know I'm asking you to change something. So yeah, I think doing that work really set us in good stead when we decided to step away from freelancing to pursue our own productions.
Awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. It's always cool. To kind of hear from people who started in that and kind of worked their way over to that. Cause I know there's a lot of people I talk with all the time that are kind of in that role. They want to do films and they just don't know how to get started. And some of it's just like, go out and film stuff, start doing like you guys did some contract work, just, you know, start doing stuff and learning about it as much as you can, get into it. But, I kind of finding you guys, it's interesting because, I love talking to people who are, who are in different fields than I am. I'm definitely not a like a cinematographer or a filmmaker in that kind of sense. I definitely consider myself more of a videographer, more just, you know, I just love doing, you know, doing little stories or funny things on YouTube or corporate work. And I love being in the place I am, but seeing, you know, talking with people like you that are in that film environment, making films and doing some short films and stuff, it's always really cool to hear about some of your experiences. And that's kind of what drew me a little bit to your short film that you guys did. Was it Over the Moon, which I didn't realize was actually like a little bit of a spinoff to your Cosmos film. That we'll talk about here too. So tell me about like what kind of inspired doing that short film Over the Moon.
So Over the Moon came about because we shot our first feature film on the original Blackmagic Pocket Cinema camera from 2013. Mm-hmm. We loved it. We got our hands on it and really, you know, wondered what we could do with it. And then when the film was released, we were connected with a few folks at Blackmagic Design, the company, and they were kind of so pleased and impressed with what we'd done with the original Pocket that it came about that they, you know, when the 6K came out, the 6K Pro rather, mm-hmm. We were speaking to them and they said, look, you know, if we give you the 6K Pro, is there something you think, you know, you can do with it? And then so very quickly, Xander and I were like, wow, you know, if we got hold of that camera, we'd love to almost re-enter the world of Cosmos and see how there are certain things we try to achieve with that feature film, shooting at night, shooting in low light. What capability would the new camera offer us, and how could we, you know, achieve some of those things that we couldn't actually achieve with the original camera? So it kind of came about from being us getting our kicks, re-entering the world of a story we were really fond of, but then also it being almost like a real camera test for this new camera. And then for us moving forwards going, hey, you know, we'd like to use this 6K Pro on our next feature and really get to grips with it. So it's kind of came from two different routes.
That's pretty
really cool.
That's awesome that they saw that from your other film and kind of got you guys into that camera. How do you feel after using it? I know I like from reading some of the articles about how you guys had filmed that, I thought it was interesting using just some of the low light ability you guys were able to get out of the higher ISO. I have to say, like, I always kind of preached in like 400, 3200, your native ISOs for the camera, but I know you guys went 4000 with it. And I was like, as soon as I saw that, I'm like, oh, I need to watch this to see how they kind of like, because it gets real weird after you pass that 3200 ISO.
Yeah, it does. I think the bracket, the range that we've put up for the kind of tech specs is from, it goes up to 4000, but we mm-hmm. actually only shot, I think it was one shot in the movie that's 4000. Mm-hmm. And we kind of did it as a bit of a test really, because we wanted to see how far it could be pushed. You know, the noise removal in DaVinci Resolve is just epic.
Oh, it's excellent.
And, and you know, we'd heard of people kind of pushing the camera and all this. So we, on one particular shoot, one of the shoots that we had, we were like, let's see what we can do with this. And mm-hmm. can we proudly put this in the movie, you know, and say, actually, it does hold up. It is possible. But like you said, it can get a bit funky. So we actually, the majority of the movie was shot, didn't go over 1000. Mm-hmm. And you know, we were careful about that, but the noise removal, like it is really remarkable. And if you have enough, you know, today with the LED panel lights, the battery powered lights, you can get out there in a field, you can put them on full whack, you can open up the ISO, and you can really get a lot out of these cameras. Like when we compare it to what we did with the original Pocket on Cosmos, it's just come such a long way. And, you know, we were really struggling for light on the feature, and mm-hmm. we had no problems whatsoever on this short film. So
yeah, having really that dual native ISO option, which is interesting. It's almost a feature I think should be on every camera, every video camera, mm-hmm. cinema camera going forward.
Yeah.
Just gives you that nice, like extra boost when you need it. You know, you usually want to stay below that 1000, but like, it's still a great option if you need that high, like much brighter, and you're in those kind of conditions.
If you find yourself in a corner, definitely, like you're losing light, you've got that sense of security that if, you know, if you need to, you can go there and it's going to be okay. So yeah, I agree.
For sure. So yeah, like most of the short film that you guys had done was a lot of low light. Now, I think you did some of it in the daylight too and kind of color corrected it down, right? A couple of times, a couple of the shots?
A little bit. We shot over dusk, so again, I know we keep referencing Cosmos, but in Cosmos, what we did was we We shot the stuff on location with our actors, got into the edit, and due to the no budget nature of the film, we looked at the footage and it felt pretty flat, almost like the actors were nicely lit, but mm-hmm. the background just dropped off. You know, it was pitch black behind them because we were just in the middle of a field and we didn't have much lighting. So we went in there in post, I did visual effects work and extended the background. So we put in some skylines, some horizons, some stars, things like that. And when it came to this short, we were like, okay, firstly, I don't want to do that again because it took forever. But secondly, you know, the camera's more sensitive. We've got a bit more push and pull with RAW. We can work with this in DaVinci Resolve. So what we did is we set ourselves a challenge of going like, okay, let's try and get that extra sky illumination in camera. So we started at the beginning of sunset and we shot for about an hour, and we did that two nights in a row. And across that hour, we would ride the settings of the camera. So we started the night with the NDs in, ISO right down. We had mm-hmm. to blast the actress with light to compete with the brighter sky, you know, the sun was setting. And then as the sun went down, obviously NDs came out, ISO went up, lights got dimmer, the key light got dimmer. And it was this like delicate, you know, riding of the ratios so that when we got into post, that skyline always stayed roughly the same exposure, and we didn't have to do much pushing and pulling. So yeah, so
that's awesome. Saving you all that time in the post-production, right?
Yeah. Honestly, yeah. I just had to put a few twinkling stars in. I was like, this is great. This would have been really good on Cosmos.
That's awesome, because you could almost look at it and say like, man, that looks, yeah, how you did it. You almost think maybe they did it in post, but that's incredible that you guys were able to do that in camera. So some of those moon shots you guys did through the telescope, were those real? And if so, how did you kind of pull that off? What kind of equipment did you use for that?
So a bit of both, really. We shot the moon for real. We, mm-hmm. because we've kind of fallen in love with astronomy, making films about astronomers, we have a telescope now that we share. And one of the first things that we thought when we got the camera was, I wonder if we can stick this 6K on the back of the telescope and do some astrophotography with it.
Let's do it.
Let's see what we can get. So we went out on a full moon and we had the 6K on this telescope, which is the equivalent of something like a 1300 mil lens or something. And got these pretty stunning 6K shots of the moon. And then in post-production, then Xander, who's the kind of the VFX element of the team, he was able to comp those in post, put the actual moon footage into some of the wide shots. And then also with the telescope, create almost like an artist, not an artistic impression, but a heightened reality of a telescope.
Exactly,
like a telescope viewfinder. So there was some VFX in there to sew it into the film, but the footage of the moon we shot for real, and it was pretty amazing actually to see it in such high fidelity.
Yeah, it was great. We due to the length of the lens, the telescope, we actually had to shoot the moon in two halves, and then I kind of comped it into this mega moon. We've called it the mega moon, and we've actually released it. It's on our you can download it from our Vimeo. There's a link in the
that's awesome
in so, the short, so you can use it for your own, you know, own work. If you ever need a moon, just need to credit us for the moon.
that's awesome. So you couldn't shoot it all on one side, so you had to stitch it all together essentially.
That's right. That's crazy.
The lens was just too long. We were like, all right, what are we gonna do here?
But it's great, you know, people can, you know, you can manipulate it. It's such high resolution, so hopefully people will get some use out of it.
Yeah, how much did you have to stitch together?
It was top half and bottom half.
About like a 12K.
I think it's actually around 5K or just below, like,
oh, interesting.
Just okay. Above more height.
Yeah. Because it's the ratio of the moon. Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, I thought I kind of was wondering, like, this is either a really good CGI or you kind of done, like you'd filmed it. Cause it, you know, sometimes you get files and stuff from like stock footage or whatever, and it's hard to kind of match what you're filming in post as hard as you try. So that's why I was like, it looks so much, so close to like everything else that was in the film. So I kind of figured that you've done that. That's really cool how you ended up having to do that though. That's really fascinating.
Yeah. And all of the wide shots that are set on top of the hill with the actress, there was no moon there on that night. You know, it was,
I kind of figured, so, yeah, I don't, yeah, I don't think I've seen the moon that big before.
yeah, quite.
But mega it looked moon. Great. That would, I mean, but it still looked great. Like you could watch it and think that's probably a CGI, you know, or like a special effects CGI shot or whatever,
but you couldn't necessarily like, it didn't take away from it because you couldn't really tell, you know, because it looked
Thank
real.
You, yeah.
So I
Thanks.
Think,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things you go out, when you go out stargazing and you look at the moon and your eyes adjust and everything, it's the perception of like what it feels like to be out on a full moon that we wanted to get across. And mm-hmm. Cosmos has a slightly heightened kind of reality fantasy element to it as well. So yeah, with this, we wanted to, yeah, really suggest that this is a maybe a super moon. You know, you sometimes get a super moon and the yep. moon feels bigger and brighter and everything. So that's what we went for.
That's so cool. Yeah, I thought that was such a cool concept and how you guys did that and how you really pushed. You know, there's a lot of people that'll test out like the 6K Pro and they won't do anything interesting with it. So it's always cool to see people online or even on YouTube trying cool things with the camera and doing that. So totally cool. So
thank you.
Like we had mentioned before, this was a little bit of a spinoff or entering back in the world of Cosmos, which was a movie you released it in 2019, or is that kind of around the time you were filming it?
That's correct. No, end of 2019, November. And we filmed it across 2015, 2016. And then it took, because it was a no budget production. It was just Xandra and I and a few other friends got together to make it. And then post-production took about 28 months with just Xandra and I. slogging away at it. So it took about 2 years to get it released. But yeah, that was shot on the original Damn. Pocket.
I don't know if I'd be patient enough to do post-production for that one.
It was a necessity more than a desire. We just after we left school, we wrote a movie, a script for a film, and we kind of spent about 2 years pulling together all the elements to make this film, and we had a business plan and we were going to get independent investment and all sorts, but we kept going back to these investors and these companies and they were like, guys, this project sounds great and the people you've got attached are great, but you've never made a feature film before. And we were 19 and 21 at the time. Mm-hmm. And so they were just like, go off and make a movie, go and prove that you can do it. And we were like, okay, that's kind of what we're trying to do. But and so that's where how Cosmos was born. We stepped away and we were like, what can we write that we can achieve with what we've got? You know, we've done all this freelancing work, we've developed some of these skills, built up some of this equipment, and that Cosmos was born out of that. You know, nice. we just wrote a simple story.
What kind of inspired the that kind of story?
All sorts of things, really. From a sort of a tonal science fiction point of view, we were very inspired by the movies that we fell in love with when we were kids. You know, we watched a lot of Amblin. We watched films like Jumanji and Men in Black and mm-hmm. Back to the Future. And there's a lot of warmth and there's a lot of heart in those films. And actually, interestingly, when we were shooting Cosmos, Stranger Things was released. And people were going, oh, are you really inspired by Stranger Things? And we were like, no, we love Stranger Things, but we're inspired by the things that Stranger Things has been inspired by. But there was that. And then at the time, also, a lot of our documentary work was about NASA and the Apollo space race. And we were interviewing a lot of engineers that worked at Apollo in the 60s. And we were just blown away by these guys, you know, who were in their early 20s at the time, and they were in charge of this incredible endeavor. And we became as in awe of these engineers and these backroom guys and the control mission control guys as the astronauts. And we thought, wouldn't it be cool if, you know, in movies, generally there's a hero like James Bond, there's a hero, but then there's a guy with the brains like Q, but he's never really the guy that saves the day. And we thought, wouldn't it be fun to make a movie about engineers and scientists? And they are the heroes. They are put in the spotlight and they do come through, and they're the heroes of this adventure. So Cosmos came about because of our documentary work and all sorts of ideas, really. But it was this idea of going, let's take some of the characters that we've met doing documentaries and let's make them the focus of a little sci-fi adventure.
Yeah, and for context, Cosmos follows three amateur astronomers who they kind of, on their nights off, they kit out a car full of computers and telescopes and stargazing equipment, and they drive out into the night and set up their kit, and you know, they're amateur astronomers, they love it. By day, they're like professional scientists, engineers and stuff. But by night, they go out there and they stargaze. And then on this particular night that we joined them, they stumble across a signal from space. And so, you know, the concept behind the movie was like, what if this huge thing, this huge discovery was made by ordinary people, you know, rather than like a big organization or something? What if it happened to just three people in a car? What would they do?
Yeah, that's great. Which is funny you mentioned the signal in space, because I just saw somewhere, I guess yesterday, they were announcing that there was some signal, mysterious signal coming from space that NASA had detected or something too. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah. It's a big deal. I mean, there's the James Webb Space Telescope out there now looking for life out there, but it's a common thing actually that like the amateur astronomer community do a lot of the work that ends up being influential, you know, because there's so many people around the world looking at the stars. They often find things, or, you know, NASA will turn to the community and say, help us out, collect a load of data. So it's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to see how people too, I mean, people outside of like, you know, government organizations or corporate organizations seem to have a little bit more creative freedom to go explore things and time than, you know, if you're like having to work on NASA's timeline. So that's
very true.
It's always cool to see like in, you know, in your story, how like small, like people who are maybe not the top of the food chain can kind of still make those really cool discoveries and stuff.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. We've got a friend and sorry to tag this on. We've got a friend who, when he saw the movie, he was like, you do realize you made a movie about indie filmmaking here. You've got like guys like hustling really hard outside the system. Gears failing. Car full of kit, headphones on. And we were like, oh, wow. Yeah, we have.
It totally does. And I guess that is the always thing is like, you know, that what you're always told is to create what you know, or like tell stories about what you know. And it really feels like in that film, I've watched a good bit of it and the trailers for it, which I think are all excellent. The composition that you guys did for it, you know, there's a lot of times you see a bunch of people who do like feature films or like their feature films or, you know, on YouTube, and they'll show it and it's just like, oof, like, not that should discourage anyone from doing it, but I just thought like the composition that you guys had for your shots and stuff looked like it could have come from any normal movie. I thought like the composition, the lighting, the creative direction with it was great. And it surprised me when I read about the camera you guys used for it, which we had kind of mentioned before, which the original pocket cinema camera.
Right, yeah.
So how'd you guys like using that camera in particular?
We loved it. It's actually, I don't know whether I can get it with my headphones. It's actually behind us here.
It's
like,
up there.
Here it is. This is what we shot Cosmos on. There you go. I'll put myself in.
There you go.
That's the original pocket. And it's very much the body of the camera now is very much like even smaller than iPhones now. We fell in love with it. You know, we saw a lot of test footage of it online when it came out, and we were eyeing up a camera to shoot Cosmos on. And we just thought, you know what, let's just go for it. And, we got it in our hands, and it just felt very enabling. It was small, it was agile. It's quite famous for needing a lot of help. You know, it needs the extra battery life and the external monitor and stuff. It's really just a sensor, but as a sensor, it was beautiful. And we didn't, earlier you mentioned Cinema DNG and stuff. We didn't actually shoot RAW for Cosmos. We just shot shot ProRes LT.
Oh wow.
Which is like literally the lowest we could get on it, because we knew
it was gonna be massive files.
Yeah, we were like, we actually shot something like 70 hours or 80 hours of material for the film. Man. And it was no budget, so we couldn't just keep buying massive storage. But absolutely blown away by it. And we had it blown up on a big cinema screen, and we've had filmmaker friends and professionals going like, what? I don't understand. Like, how does it look so good? And we're like, well, it's the camera.
That's, I mean, to me, I'm kind of shocked that you were able, I would have assumed you did RAW on that, how good it looked. So it's surprising to me that you did ProRes LT on that. And it looked that good. That's incredible. I mean, great work with that. I mean, again, I think it's a testament to how like, it doesn't really kind of matter sometimes what camera you use. It's all about the storytelling, the composition, how you light scenes. And
we're big supporters of that concept, really. You know, we did some tests with the RAW and we did some tests with the ProRes. And honestly, we were like, okay, there is a slight quality difference, but for us, is the audience going to care more about that slight quality difference or like how the film's lit? The composition of the shots, the story, the acting, the sound effects, the music, all of those things to us felt more important than an extra little bit of detail or, you know, handling Moiré slightly better or something, you know?
Which, you know, only annoys like filmmakers or people who actually know what to look for. Cause you know, I'll have to show videos. I'm like, oh, they're using this camera. They're probably not reusing the right bit rate because, you know, this, and they're like, this, what are you talking about?
Yeah. I remember talking to someone a few years ago and we were talking about digital cinema cameras and they weren't in the industry at all or anything. And they were like, this was probably about 2011 or 12 when digital cinema was really coming in. And they were like, what do you mean? And we were like, oh, you know, films are becoming a little bit more affordable because of digital cinema. And they were like, have they not shot digital cinema for like 15 years? And when we just realized that anybody outside the industry, they don't know. And more importantly, they just don't care. No. Like they're there to watch a story and, you know, enjoy them, right?
Yeah, and it's as much as like I love Christopher Nolan movies, and Christopher Nolan loves his film cameras and doing that specific way. And I guess it's something, you know, it's for like people who are into video or film or that, like you really appreciate that. But like, rest of my family or friends are like, oh, it's a good movie. They don't really see the quality, like the difference in it. So yeah, absolutely. You're right. Like, it's interesting how digital's kind of moving its way into that. So I know you guys used barely an expensive camera for this and looks great. What kind of lenses did you guys kind of land on for it?
Well, for both the short Over the Moon and Cosmos, we shot on, we have a Canon zoom, just I think it's like a 15 to 55.
What is the Tamron that we used,
actually? Oh yeah, we use this Tamron zoom, which is just... we got off Amazon, yeah, I think, was
about,
it?
About 90 quid or something.
18 to 200 Tamron zoom for a long lens. But the majority of the film, I would say 90% of the film, was shot on just one lens, which was a Sans Hunter 28mm. It's actually a 1960s stills lens. It's just a really weird, you know, very... not rare, but you don't see them very often, just stills lens. And it, you know, it's not rigged in any way for cinema use. It's not declicked on the iris or anything, but it's just a lens that we had and we liked it and we put it on the camera and thought it looked pretty. And yeah, that's what we used.
Yeah, so two lenses.
Yeah, two lenses. The most of it, because it was inside the car, very close. Yeah. The camera was small. And actually, we also had like a wide angle diopter that we would, to change the lens, we would either unscrew the wide angle or screw it back on. You know, that was it. We would have that 28 mil with the wide on, or 28 mil for a bit more of a hero feel. And
yeah,
and that was it.
That's awesome that you guys were able to film. Again, it's crazy the equipment that you were able to get that good of a picture quality off of and that much of a cinematic feel for this movie.
Thank you. We're like just big fans of kind of grabbing what you got and going and doing it. And we often say to people, you know, if you're as good as you think you are, right, you should just be able to grab what you got and go and do something cool with it. And you know, Steven Spielberg with my iPhone would be able to make a better movie than I could with all of his kit. So you know, always important to keep that in mind.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's just incredible. And I would guess too, from our previous discussion earlier on about how, you know, working some of those odd jobs and contract work beforehand, kind of like, I feel like in my experience has taught me how to like think on the fly and just come up with like the most janky setups that like are awful, but they end up, I mean, they work, right? Like, yeah, and no one, totally. If you don't see behind the camera, you don't know how it happened. So, with that, were there other interesting things you guys kind of had to like work through for this film loads. To kind of setups? Cause I can imagine some of the fun you had trying to figure out.
Yeah, loads and loads of stuff. The rig was homemade, so it was made from MDF and copper piping that I bought from a hardware store down the road.
That's awesome.
Part of our matte box was cardboard that we just kind of bulldog clipped to the side. We had a slider, a Canova K3 slider, which served us really well. But when we were in the car, you know, we couldn't rig tripods or anything, so one of our key pieces of like grip equipment were paint pots that we balanced our slider on and bolted, used magic arms to bolt it to parts of the car and stuff. And there's some fantastic behind the scenes photos and stuff. Like towards the end, they're standing outside and there's a breeze and we had a leaf blower and our tripod wouldn't reach high enough, so we got them to squat. You know, we've got these really cool photos and they've just got really wide legs. Yeah,
they're all like four guys in a row looking really epic, but below frame, they're all like, squat. Their legs are all like this.
They're all squatting.
It's like, can you just squat down a bit? Because we can't get that
high. Keep going.
Yeah. So it was, but in a way, you know, we documented the whole process, particularly we had an Instagram account that was sort of a video production diary, photographic and video diary.
Still there.
For Cosmos, and we very quickly became you know, as filmmakers, you kind of want to be proud of what you do. And there's a lot of pressure to look cool and be behind an Arri Alexa or be on a big set with a lot of gear and a lot of kit. And actually, after a while, we became really proud of how ad hoc this was. But yet we were still getting it done. And so we were just really open and really honest. Like, here's our cardboard mat box. Here's our wind machine leaf blower. This is really lame, but it's also incredible because look what we're doing with it. So we became big fans of just encouraging people to go, hey, just grab what you got and make something good with it.
When you kind of break down the components of filmmaking, you don't actually need that much. You know, you need a few lights, you need a camera, you need a few people who are interested in lights and costume or something. You know, our crew was myself, Elliot, and our mom. Our cast was three main actors, and we had a composer in post who did a fantastic job. That's the main team behind Cosmos. We had friends who came and helped us with smoke machines on certain nights and things like that. But predominantly, it was three people in the crew and three people in front of the camera. And we love just talking to people and saying, just grab what you got and go and do it. Because, when you do boil it down to its core components, it's so achievable now.
Yeah, that's so crazy. And I guess the good thing about how you guys even approach it too is, you know, I think there's this thing with creatives where we just kind of like want to like hold on to the project ourselves and try to control every little thing about it. But at some point you got to realize like there are so many different aspects of filmmaking that like there's no way I'm going to be an expert at all of them. So to create what you want to, you have to bring others along with you and get them bought into your vision and find those friends that'll just like, you know, agree to do crazy things that you decide to do randomly. Oh, yeah,
absolutely. And it was an amazing experience for us. You know, we've walked away the film. We got distribution for the film. We had a theatrical run in the States. We went out to LA for a premiere in Hollywood, and it was just us. It was like our six people, our six person team, you know, and some relatives who came to, some good friends of ours. And for us, it was this incredible journey. We'd gone from like filming in a garage or in the woods in the middle of the night with barely any equipment or anything to standing next to the Hollywood sign and, you know, high-fiving each other and feeling like we'd really achieved something. And the nature of how we made the movie, it really seeps into the movie itself, you know, and it's the greatest legacy of that process is just like the friendships that we made.
We used to joke, it's kind of like we were there at the premiere, it kind of felt like the end of Ocean's 11, you know, it was like a bunch of friends that we got away with it somehow, like we were there going, nobody knows, but we got away with this, you know, and then we all just like part ways to the sound of Claire de Lune or something.
that's hilarious. I mean, it's kind of cool, you know, you develop that friendship and that bond through doing all that kind of stuff. How was it working? Was this kind of the first time you guys had worked with actors before? Cause you had done, I know you guys had done documentaries before and stuff like that. Answering that question too, like how was it working with actors?
Yeah. Do you want to?
Yeah. So we had done before Cosmos, we'd done three short films, four short films, something like that. I can't remember. And there'd been actors in it, but really Cosmos was kind of the first time we had actors in a scene kind of talking to each other in a scripted sense. We'd done one short film before where they were communicating, but it was kind of a lot of ad lib. So this was our first time. We really jumped in. We were like, okay, we're going to do a feature film. We're going to get actors talking to each other. This is the first time we've done anything like this, and we're going to go for it.
Yeah.
And it was a real blast. Working with doing our documentary work, certainly, or corporate work in general, certainly equips you with, like you said earlier, a flexibility, a kind of feeling of I can adapt and I can make this up on the fly. I can put people really at ease really quickly because I'm used to meeting contributors and, you know, by within 5-10 minutes, they're sitting in the hot seat and you're trying to put them, you know, make them feel relaxed and deliver great content, you know. So when you're dealing with someone you've known for a few weeks and you're trying to get a performance out of them, it's kind of, I wouldn't say it's easier, but it's very, if anything, I would say it's not easy, but corporate documentary, there's things about it that are trickier. You don't have a lot of resources. You don't have a lot of time. Often you're squeezed into someone's office somewhere and you're trying to make the background look as good as you can or something. So a lot of that, you know, it's the same old thing, everyone. I remember watching an interview with Chris Nolan, and he did corporate work early on in his career. And he was talking about stuff like this, about getting, you know, two lights in an office and doing talking heads. And you kind of go, wow, you know, everyone has that experience.
Yeah, they've all done it. I think it is a really great training ground, actually.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, even you guys saying that, like, there's been situations for me where it's like, that's like almost the trait of being a good contract videographer, or it's like being able to like get people to be at ease with you on camera, 100%. You know, when you're trying to film and get that reaction or whatever. And it's a lot of like joking around and always trying to make sure that, you know, the people that you have working with you are fun and are, you know, because a lot of times, like, it could be so stressful to try to film something because it's like your profession and you got to make sure everything's right. But at the same time, like, you can't act too stressed out because you're going to stress out the person you're interviewing.
That's it. Absolutely. we have this thing where, you know, when we're directing, when we were directing Cosmos and then recently this short, in your head, things are going a million miles an hour. You know, you're like conscious of this, that, and the other, and you're, you know, trying to keep the plates spinning and like this. And then we look at the behind the scenes footage and it's like really calm. And we're like, it does not feel like that in my head. Like, it's super calm. And we always look at each other and we go, it feels really relaxed on this set, but like in our heads, you know, there's so much going on that
you're on fire.
Time is just flowing by and you feel like you're on fire or something. So it's really important to kind of outwardly have a kind of calm environment. You know, everything's fine, but inside you're like going.
Especially when things are going wrong. Like, I have it like, you know, you'll come, everything's fine, all your equipment's always worked fine, and then you'll show up on set and like all your lapels, you know, your lapel mics all break, and you're just like, then, you know, then you're trying to keep the talent, like, you know, not like annoyed that you have to keep putting, you know, lapels on them on over and over and over again and fix it and stuff. And it's definitely a skill that you need to have. That's hilarious.
I remember we did one job. Do you remember we did that music video and the smoke machine didn't work?
Oh yeah, and the guy
we went and filmed, it was like a music video and there was a big house and there was like an Aston Martin and something, and there was a guy performing in front of them, and we wanted smoke, you know, we wanted smoke wafting through the scene, and our smoke machine just packed in, and the guy who owned the house and the cars, he was like, I've got a compost heap, I could get a wheelbarrow and burn a load of grass if you want. And we were like,
wow,
okay, I mean, if you're all right with that, you know.
That also happened, something very similar happened on, we made a short film that was set during the First World War. So we had a trench sequence. There's like a trench museum locally to us. They've got an outdoor trench system. And we needed a load of smoke, and our smoke machine just wasn't cutting it. And they were just like, we've got a load of old rags and blankets, we can put them in a dustbin and burn them. And we were like, wow, you know, okay, yeah, that'd be great.
You would never ask anyone to do that, would you? But they're just like, oh, it's fine, like, you know, yeah, I'll just can burn that.
Yeah,
that's very... so cool. I mean, it's so funny hearing about how things were made behind the scenes, because, you know, it just like you guys said, like, things break and then you got to figure out how to still make it. So I know you guys had kind of filmed through this and you took a long time, it sounds like, in post-production to put this together. How kind of walk me through that post-production process for you. How kind of was that? For me, only, you know, used to like maybe like a week at most turnaround process for my videos and stuff. How kind of nerve-wracking was it to spend all this time, you know, trying to perfect that film, work with the actors, film it all, get it all on hard drives, and then have to go down and sit down and edit it? How kind of was that process for you?
It was fatiguing, shall we say. Like, definitely. The shoot was tough. Everyone knows shooting's tough. We shot for 55 days over about 11 months. We were working within the actors' schedules, really. Sometimes they'd go, I've got to go off for 2 months now and do something else. And we're like, fine, we'll have a hiatus. We'll come back and we'll get some more. But once we'd got all the material, we actually started cutting the movie before we'd finished shooting it, but it was a long process. So the picture cut was 10 months. And that was literally, you know, Xander and I were working on it 5 days a week. So I did the picture cut 5 days a week for 10 months. It took that long because we'd never done anything like this before. You know, we didn't have any assistant editors syncing up footage or anything like that, making selects. So I did the picture cut. All of that time you were starting the VFX, I was starting to pull out shots and go, I think we need something on this, some sky replacement, or you know, oh, crikey, you know, he's still got his hood on. We had one scene, there was one of the characters had a detachable furry hood, furry collar on his hood, and we asked him to take it off. And then on one day, he didn't take it off. He put it back on and none of us noticed. And for some of the shots he had, we're like, is there any way we can VFX this hood out? Like, what are we doing? So it was all that sort of stuff. You worked on VFX for about 18 months.
Yeah,
I did sound design for about 18 months, 5 days a week again. It was just like never ending. You
it
know?
Was, it was, man. we, it wasn't, interestingly, there was no like lack of determination to make it happen. We had very personal reasons for getting the movie finished. We also felt that we owed it to the actors who'd given us their time and the friends who'd come to help us shoot it and stuff. It was more just a marathon of like mental stamina, really. Like it was tiring. It was isolating. You know, we did lockdown before COVID was a thing, you know, like we were working in this room for just months and months and months and not seeing anybody. And so when that hit, we were just like, what's changed?
Yeah, welcome to the suck, mate.
Nothing's changed for us. Still got no social life, you know. So yeah, it was more about the kind of mental fatigue of it, really. That was the biggest challenge. But the creative side of it and the kind of practical side was fine. It was just knuckle down, keep your head down,
just a lot
keep
of work. Working.
Yeah, a lot of work.
I can only imagine, because I mean, there's corporate projects I work on, or even like YouTube videos that I do, that I'm just like, you just get so burnt out making it.
Yeah.
And I have not spent six to eight or 10 months or 11 months, how long you guys did on it. And you still get burnt out. And it's also hard the longer you work on a project too. You've seen so much of it. It's so hard to be objective about it anymore.
Totally. Is this funny anymore? Is this good? I don't know. I don't know anymore.
Yeah. And then you see every little mistake, right?
Yeah.
So, which no one will ever see, but you kind of like consciously like, oh my gosh, like, is this,
yeah,
what are we even doing anymore? How did you guys kind of get around that? Because I've heard some tricks before from some editors on movies where they say they literally will like flip the video upside down.
Oh, that's a really cool idea.
To give it a different perspective. So you're just not looking at the same thing and you can kind of judge it that way. But do you guys have any tricks or anything to kind of keep that mental focus?
I know that artists do a similar thing when they're, you know, digital artists will flip their canvas and start working on the piece reversed, which is,
that is cool.
Could absolutely do that with a movie. One thing that we did do, I think it was, we were reading something or interview with Walter Murch or something. And he says, what I have when I'm editing on a computer is I cut out some small people and I to scale, like as if the computer screen was a cinema screen and the people were to scale. And he said that always reminds me of like how big these faces are going to be when they appear on screen.
Yeah, he cuts out like a row of people as if it's a cinema row, like you're sitting behind an audience row, and at the bottom of your screen he's got all these heads.
It
kind of like makes him go, okay, this is a cinema screen, you know.
It's an important reminder, like the goal here is to make something that fits on this huge canvas. And, you know, you don't always need to be super close on things. You can let the audience's eyes kind of do the cutting for you in a wide or whatever. And it gives you this sense of the scale, but it didn't really prepare us, because when we finally got to see the film on a big screen, it just felt so amazing and refreshing, and it was so special. So
I can imagine after all those years of work too, to finally see like that project, kind of come to fruition. I know. That's so cool. It's so, from the parts of the film I've watched already, it's excellent. I love the way you guys directed it, filmed it, went through all the stuff, and even hearing more about kind of how you guys did things behind the scenes. It's just incredible to see. I think it kind of speaks to, like we've kind of talked about several times, is that you just don't need an RE to go start doing this stuff and learning how to do some of this stuff. And like, you know, in the past decade, it's become so easy to get equipment that allows you to be able to start working like you're on movie sets and stuff and start learning the trade kind of. So
absolutely.
And kind of wrapping this up, what would be an encouragement to other people listening or watching this, you know, who are just maybe at the beginning or maybe in the middle of filming or in the middle of their 11 month editing journey, what's some encouragement you can give them?
I think for someone who's starting their journey, maybe they've just decided to pick up a camera and start filming, I think don't underestimate the power of that kit that's available today. You know, when we were growing up, we were making short movies on like Hi8 and Mini DV, and it didn't look anything like a movie because it was like videotape, and we had to work really hard to try and get something that looks cinematic. And I think there's a tendency, or it's very easy for like younger people starting out to look at a camera and go, well, if I've got access to it, surely it's not as good as like, you know, an Arri Alexa. Surely that's the key to making something cinematic or making a movie. But actually, the cameras that are available now, the pocket cameras, whatever it is you choose to shoot with, they are so full of capability. They are so capable of making cinema-worthy movies. It's all about you, your imagination, and what stories you can come up with that fit within your kind of restrictions, really. So I'd say just don't underestimate the power, you know? Don't underestimate the power that's in the hands.
I mean, I think it's like, if you got access to an Arri Alexa or a Red or something, then amazing, like more power to you, get out there and shoot. But one thing our dad always used to say to us when he's no longer around, sadly, but one of the pieces of advice he used to give us was a bit like, you know, it's a bit like wearing the same football boots as someone like Cristiano Ronaldo, right? Mm-hmm. Just because you put those football boots on doesn't mean you're going to suddenly be able to curl in a free kick from 40 yards out. It's not going to make you a superstar footballer, but you're wearing the same boots as him. The reason why he's exceptional is because of his talent and his craft and how much he has invested in everything other than the kit. If you're as good as him, like you're Tiger Woods or something, if you're as good as someone like that, then yeah, that pro level gear is going to give you that percentage that's the difference between being the champion or not. But if you're starting out, what matters is getting a golf club in your hands and learning how to swing and hit the ball and enjoying it. And I think we really benefited from that advice because it made us go, hey, you know, here's a $600 camera that no one in the industry would take seriously at all. But you know what? Sod it. We're going to make a movie on it. And we have spoken to filmmakers that are kind of peer level to us, and they've gone, you know, I've waited and I've waited and I've waited, and now you've got a movie and I don't. So my advice would be, aspire to work on a Panavision or aspire to work on IMAX one day. We all hope to get there, but don't let that stop you from, like Xander said, picking up the camera that's in your hands and realizing that it's the artist that matters, not the tool. And you know, you can make some incredible, tell some incredible stories with iPhones and Canons and Black Magics and
exactly, you know, whatever else. And even the same from my side of stuff, it's like YouTube. I mean, even like if you want to do YouTube or you want to make fun videos, like, just, it doesn't matter where your talent level is with it, just start making it. Be totally okay to fail, because what is it that's always said? You'd rather almost fail because you learn every time you fail than when you succeed, you don't learn anything. So the more and more you give yourself chances to fail with something, you just see this progression of growth and stuff, and just, you know, sticking to it. And even for myself doing YouTube over the past few years, it's weird going back and seeing like videos I started with and like cringing a little bit. Kind of seeing that slow progression of like, there's so many things you learn from just doing something.
Yeah.
Like setting aside time to do it and just trying a bunch of things. Even if it doesn't work out, it doesn't do well, no one watches it, you still learn something from that whole process.
Enjoy the process.
Absolutely.
You know, you it doesn't matter if you've got a good idea and you think you've got a good story, you could shoot it on a potato, you know, and people would still would still enjoy what you're creating. If you're creating comedy content, or, you know, if you were to go and take like an Oscar nominee for Best Picture, and you were to pull out the star that's in it, but keep the story, keep the passion and the level of like craft in the film, but shoot it on an iPhone, it would still be an amazing movie. It would still be like an award-winning, an award-worthy film. And so don't get caught up on it, you know. Don't let it stop you from just creating your content, because like you just said, you'll grow, you'll get more access to bigger things, better things, and you'll actually be able to make the most of that advancement rather than assuming it's some magic bullet that's going to fix everything for you.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, thanks for this interview. I've got one more last question for you guys, sure, and then we'll go ahead and wrap this up. But, you know, I kind of like to end on this with a lot of different people to get their perspective. I've noticed, and I've kind of based my channel around this a lot, is this trend that's kind of started since COVID of like the, like we've talked about in this, the video industry has exploded. The consumer cameras are, you know, pro cameras are at consumer prices now. Anyone can use them. And I've kind of noticed there, you know, this initial problem of people who are at a certain level, or, you know, that kind of like level, looking down on people that are just starting out or asking basic questions and kind of that. And I've seen that a lot of the community groups, whether it's Facebook, Reddit, you know, and like Black Magic forums, whatever, of, you know, people who are just starting, getting kind of put down by other people, in a mean-spirited way.
Yeah.
What's kind of something we can do, as a community? I mean, even if, you know, I'm not a filmmaker, but I'm, you know, I'm kind of learning things from you that I could even apply in work I do. What's things that we could, you know, kind of get together as a community and kind of see things, learn from each other instead of kind of putting each other down for, like, you know, oh, well, you're using a Black Magic, but you're not an actual filmmaker because you're not making a feature film with it.
Yeah. Weird.
I think the
good question.
Yeah. Great question. And I think it's really important as well. I think we've all got to stick together. You know, the reality is it's us against the industry, really. Mm-hmm. Like, we all want to be part of it, but like, it's cutthroat, it's tough, it's challenging. And the more that we can support each other, the more that we can help other people, the more we will be helped by others. If we try and develop this concept of a supportive filmmaking community, it can be so cutthroat between people. And, mm-hmm. you know, I don't get it myself. Our philosophy has always been, particularly with Cosmos, people contact us and we just answer everything we can as honestly and openly as possible. We've been contacted by other filmmakers who have made features and we'd offered them guidance on distribution and everything. Like, the you've got to be, it's corny, but you've got to be the change that you want to see in the world, haven't you? You've got to, if you want other people to be open and to be honest and to help you, you've got to help other people. So I hate when people put down others because they were there once. You know, it's like when people get annoyed at learner drivers. It's like, you were a learner once and you didn't know what you were doing. And if you've got enough time to be on here trolling and spouting this hate, like, what are you doing? Like, Roger Deakins isn't on here throwing some shade on people, you know, like,
he's too busy making movies.
So just stop doing it. So yeah, I think
I remember reading something, like, you know, a nugget of advice, or I don't know what it was, on Instagram or something, but it said something like, you will never be criticized by someone doing more than you. You will only ever be criticized by someone who is watching from afar and they're probably jealous or they're probably insecure. There's nothing wrong with being insecure or jealous. We all get it. We're all human, mm-hmm. but they're dealing with it in a way, you know, they're making themselves the tallest person in the room by making everyone else feel small. And I think as soon as I realized that, I was like, and we've had a lot of people have emailed us and told us that Cosmos is the worst film they've ever seen in their life.
Of course. Like,
there's loads of people that hate it.
Oh yeah.
And it is very distinct. It is what it is. It's not everyone's cup of tea, as we say in England. Yeah, as soon as I realized that, it allowed me to go, okay, you know, go in peace. And also, in kind of a way, it made me quite sympathetic to them. And pity is a strong word because it sounds like a put down, but made me go, oh, this person's in pain. And I'm not going to be their therapist and be their friend, but I'm also going to just go, they're in pain. They don't know how to deal with it. I'll let them go. And yeah, it would be wonderful if as a community we could be a lot more united. I think it's a good aspiration to have.
Yeah. Well, I think too, even like working with people who are just starting out kind of helps remind you of things too. Like, you're almost going back and thinking through the process of like things that you just kind of take, you know, you don't have to think about like what ISO level to set anything at, or like what your app, you know, what exposure should it be for this specific shot. So I think there is benefit to that. And like you said, you never know where anyone's going to end up. You never, you know, you help everyone out. Everyone helps each other out.
We could all be picked up out of our comfort zone and dropped somewhere where we are completely out of our depth. So let's not pretend that we've got this all sorted and we know everything, you know?
Absolutely. Well, guys, I appreciate you guys hanging out with me and talking about your film and talking about the way you guys filmed everything and the Pocket 6K Pro with the other short film. Where's somewhere everyone can go watch Cosmos at? Where can we? And also, I know you guys have a YouTube channel as well.
Yeah, so Cosmos is available on a variety of like VOD and SVOD platforms, Hulu, Prime in the US, Tubi, iTunes, etc. It's available worldwide on Vimeo on demand, Vimeo that is. And but if you go to cosmosmovieofficial.com, you can see where you can see it in your territory, which is kind of cool. And we're on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. Just Google Cosmos Movie and we'll pop up. If you've got any questions about the process, any questions about the short, reach out to us. We do endeavor to just answer everything that we can. So be cool to hear from you.